7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line. Good morning, Met fans. How you doing? Happy Saturday. Staying dry. It's a little wet out there. I guess I have a question. Creedence Clearwater Revival may have the answer to this one. Who'll stop the rain? We lost yesterday's ball game because of rain. The Mets and Yankees were both postponed, so there's been rain up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And checking at weather.com, it looks like there's a 75% chance of rain almost every hour today in Philadelphia. So I don't know if it's going to be a wait-and-see type of thing today, whether or not they play, but the forecast right now doesn't look promising. But what does look promising is the Mets season so far. So let's talk about what we're here to talk about, New York Met baseball. So like I said, yesterday was a no-go. And with more rain in the forecast, we're going to figure out if they don't play today, when are they going to make up today's game? For yesterday's game, it's going to be made up as part of a split doubleheader on August 20th at 1:05 p.m. And that will be the last time the Mets visit Philadelphia. So is there a chance that, well, we're jumping to conclusions here, thinking today's game is going to be canceled. That could be like a five-game series if they do a doubleheader on Sunday, too. That would be something. But, like I said, we're still riding high off that 7-1 ninth inning comeback on Thursday. So, it's better to have a rainout after a victory like that than if we had lost the game. That is for sure. But the one good thing, I know the comeback was great, but it's not a comeback if you blow the lead. But it was so great seeing Edwin Diaz lock that one up so well. And Edwin's really pitching his best ball ever as a Met this season. And he is a key reason why we're doing so well. That trade for Cano, I still think it was a bad trade just due to the fact we got Cano. But if you slice Cano off the package, getting Edwin Diaz for Kelenic is pretty damn good. Kelenic has really struggled. He's been like the worst hitter in Major League Baseball since he's been playing in the Mariners organization for the big club. I think like 400 at-bats, he has the worst batting average in Major League Baseball. That could all change, of course, but that's a pretty big sample test there. But Edwin Diaz, he is lights out. I mean, he is probably one of the top five relievers in the game when he's on, and he could very well be one of the top five relievers in baseball, period. And he is looking as dominant as ever. And when he locked down that Mets combined no-hitter, it was fantastic. And then Thursday, when he closed out the Mets' wildest, most improbable ninth-inning comeback in 25 years, Diaz was again untouchable, with a sharp slider dancing and his high-octane fastball crackling. Now, Diaz has emerged over the last three seasons. A lot of people, I always say relievers are weird because one year they could be fantastic and then the next year they could be terrible and vice versa. And a lot of folks who are Met fans, some of my closest friends were really hard on Diaz after his debut in 2019. I just knew based on his past performance with Seattle, that wasn't the true Diaz. And I wasn't sure if the stellar year he had that one year with the Mariners was Diaz either. But I knew he would be a good pitcher, and I didn't think it would come to this point. I knew the potential was there. What he's doing this year could come to fruition, and by golly, it is. And we are now getting the pitcher that we wanted when we acquired him from the Mariners. He's been a dominant and reliable closer. He has a lockdown stuff, and you could see the confidence out there that he has a fiery mound presence. So far this season, Diaz has a 1.50 ERA and a 0.83 whip with 21 strikeouts and 12 innings. And folks, it doesn't get any better than that. And he's been especially nasty lately as he enters play Friday, allowing two hits over his last nine appearances, dating back to April 17th. Now, as far as Diaz's advanced numbers, they're flat out ridiculous, and they match the traditional stats. Isn't he in 100th percentile, meaning he is the best in strikeout rate, whiff percentage, and so many other categories that are very, very, like XBA, XERA, XSlug, XWOBA, XWOBA. So, unbelievable. He's in 99th percentile when it comes to chase rate and fastball velocity, 98th percentile in hard hit percentage, 97th percentile in average exit velocity, and 92nd percentile in barrel percentage. And while Diaz has been at his most dominant this season, him being very good is not a new development, as some have recently said. This is something really, when you think about it, it's been going on since 2020. Since 2020 and 2021, he's had a 2.95 ERA, 1.10 whip, and he's only allowed five homers. So that is fantastic in itself. Numbers this year are even way beyond that. So it won't come as a shock, but it's time, I think, now for the Mets to say, okay, Diaz is our man, and he's set to become a free agent after the season. Let's lock him up. And I know Uncle Steve will not hesitate in doing so. And it could be argued that signing Diaz to an extension should be the Mets' top priority now, though they should also be exploring extensions for Chris Bassitt, Brandon Nimmo, and Pete Alonso. So yes, folks, when you're a good ball club, you're going to run into these problems with contract extensions. And like I said, the last time I checked, Uncle Steve has some deep pockets, so I'm not really concerned unless something major in a negative way. I sure hope this doesn't happen to any of these four players. These four should be locked up. They are the Mets' future. They're good for the organization. Bassitt has been a fantastic acquisition, both on the field and off the field. Nimmo is just pure baseball. I mean, the enthusiasm he brings to the game. And Pete Alonso's that fiery leader you want, and he's a slugger. So while extending Diaz would make so much sense under the circumstance, it should be even more of a priority for the Mets with Seth Lugo and Trevor May, who probably would be the stopper if Diaz was not number one or on the team. And especially with Trevor May, whose injury has clouded his situation, also set for free agency after the season. So if you're going to pick one of those three, you're going to go with Diaz and cut one of the other ones loose. If you can't sign everybody, Lugo and May would be my choices to say sayonara, but I don't want to see anyone go, to be honest with you. Now, as the Mets currently stand, the only late-inning option who was under control this season is Drew Smith, so I say keep putting Drew out there. He is pitching lights out, and he's been as good as Diaz this year, and his emergence as an impact reliever this season should not be surprising. Now, granted, the sample size remains small, but Smith has pitched well for the Mets. He's just very, very, flies very much so under the radar. Now, good teams need lockdown closers, or as close as closers can come to being locked down. Closers will give up runs, they will blow games from time to time, and it sucks when it happens. Just ask the Philadelphia Phillies, they've been experiencing this for years. But that is the nature of the job, though. Though it probably won't stop a vocal minority of Met fans from going ballistic the next time Diaz gives up a lead. That's fandom, and that's the way baseball is, and that's the way baseball always will be. But back to good teams needing lockdown closers. The Mets, who feel like a legitimate World Series contender for the first time since 2016, expect to be a perennial contender. And with Uncle Steve's commitment to winning, the big league core that's in place and top prospects who should start to emerge from the minors, there's no reason to believe the Mets won't be a perennial contender. Now, there is a case to be made that it could be wiser in the long term to search for the next Diaz instead of locking up the actual Diaz. But I won't be making that case. That's because guys like Diaz are very, very hard to find, and we got one. Why would we look for another one? And because the Mets is currently constituted, should have more than enough wiggle room to fit an extension for Diaz in their budget. First, The roughly $4 million Lugo is earning this season, and the close to $8 million May is making will likely be off the books in 2023. Add that $12 million to Edwin Diaz, and I think things would work out. Then there's the Mets' payroll situation over the next few seasons, with their current commitment shrinking to $127 million by 2024 and $74 million by 2025. Yes, those figures don't account for raises via arbitration, but the Mets are in solid shape going forward. We may have a high payroll now, but we get to pick and choose who we want the next few years. And as far as what extension for Diaz could look like, perhaps, something in the $16 million range annually could make sense. Remember, relievers don't get the big bucks like starters and everyday players get. And that's the average annual value Kenley Jansen just received, and that's a little bit lower than William Hendricks, who recently got a similar deal in the open market. Now, those who have recently said the Mets have won the trade that sent Jared Kelenic to the Seattle Mariners and brought Diaz and Robinson Cano to New York, well, let's dwell on that a little bit. While it's true that Kelenic has almost been impossibly bad in parts of two seasons with the Mariners, that trade will not have even been won by the Mets, even if Kelenic flames out. That's because Kelenic, they give up an incredibly good prospect who should never have been included in a deal where the Mets were helping the Mariners by taking on a huge chunk of Cano's contract. Throwing that value money away won't change because of what Kelenic ultimately becomes. But back to Diaz's future. There will be times when he gives up a run or two, gives up a home run. Yes, 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 he will give up a home run. Or even blows an incredibly important game. And as noted above, that's the nature of being the closer. But more often than not, Diaz will not only get the job done, but be dominant while doing so. And one of the most important things to do when trying to lock down close games and late innings is make it impossible for random things to happen when the ball is put in play. And with the amount of bats Diaz misses, having him on the mound greatly lowers the chances of being done in by randomness. Over the last three seasons, Diaz has rebounded from 2019. He has looked more and more like the pitcher who could one day be on the mound as the Mets close out a World Series title. That could be this year, but the Mets should ensure that they'll have Diaz beyond 2022, with the goal being to not only compete for a championship now, but in the future. So I think you know where I stand. Let's lock in Edwin. Now, you know what I think would be fun if we took an inside look at some of the great Met historic comebacks? Yes, after Thursday, how can one not think back to the past? Down to their last out and trailing by three runs, they pulled out an unthinkable victory for one of the more unlikely regular season wins in franchise history. Now, here are some of the other dramatic Met victories that rival this one. Mets versus Braves, June 30th, 2000. Trailing 8-1 entering the bottom of the eighth inning against the Braves, the Mets put together one of the most memorable innings in the team's history, rallying for 10 runs against their nemesis to prevail 11-8. At one point, eight straight Mets reached base. Edgardo Alfonso pulled them even with a two-run single, and Mike Piazza put on an exclamation point on the rally with a laser beam of a three-run homer off reliever Terry Mulholland down the left field line that barely stayed fair. The large crowd, Shea was packed that day, 52,831, and granted a lot of it had to do with fireworks display after the game, but they were rewarded for staying in their seats with a come-from-behind victory over an opponent that entered having won 26 of their previous 32 regular season games in the one-sided rivalry. Now, how about the Mets and Expos on September 13th, 1997? Now, before Thursday's win, this was the last time the Mets had come from six runs down the ninth inning to win. Clinging to the edge of the playoff race, they had managed just one hit off Dustin Hermanson and were down 6-0. They were one strike away from being shut out before magic happened. Robert Pentagene drove in two runs with a two-strike single and slumping outfielder Carl Everett to closer Ugueth Urbina deep. Two innings later, a hobbled Bernard Gilkey sent everyone home deliriously happy with a pinch hit, two-out, three-run homer that kept the Mets' flickering postseason hopes alive with a 9-6 win in 11 innings. Then how about the Mets and the Bravos on July 17, 1973? The Mets entered the ninth inning down 7-1 just as they were against Philadelphia. It all started with what seemed like an innocent two-run homer, same as Thursday night. Instead of Francisco Lindor, it was a LeGrand Orange, Rusty Staub doing the honors. Two batters later, John Milner went deep, and all of a sudden it was a two-run game. With two outs, three straight Mets reached base, setting the table for Willie Mays' game-winning two-run single that stood up after Harry Parker retired the side in order in the bottom of the half of the frame. The win was emblematic of the team's slogan, "You Gotta Believe," courtesy of its closer Tug McGraw that year. The Mets went from last place on August 30th to the World Series. Now let's go back to the Mets-Astros at the Dome in September 2nd of 1972. Now, this was amid a lost season in which the Mets didn't sniff the playoffs. This was one day that stood above the rest. After getting blown out the previous night, the Mets seemed on their way to another ugly defeat, trailing 8-0 after seven innings. Out of nowhere, they pulled off a comeback that remains the largest in franchise history. The Mets scored 11 runs on 12 hits over the final two frames. Ken Boswell's three-run homer in the eighth made it an 8-4 game, and Wayne Garrett added a two-run single to trim the deficit to a run. Cleon Jones plated the go-ahead runs with a single, and the Mets won on a stunning 11-8 win over the Astros in the Dome. Great, great comebacks for the Metropolitans. But with the rain out yesterday and thinking about all these comebacks, I can't help but think this is a special year. This is such an opportunistic team for sure. And when you consider the Mets are hardly bashing the ball, you got guys like Dominic Smith and J.D. Davis, two players who were significant pieces of the team's nucleus in recent seasons, have been reduced to smaller roles as they try to regain their respective swings. But in a big rally the other day, there was Davis. He's a big bat, and he was in the middle of this latest ninth-inning rally with a pinch-hit double that set up Nimmo's game-tying single. Four nights earlier, it was Smith with four hits against the Phillies that helped a victory. So everybody's contributing to this team. And you know what's good about this? And, you know, I'm not poo-pooing Jacob deGrom or him being out, but his name isn't even being mentioned. And the Mets have a 19-9 record. Imagine if they had deGrom. Oh, my goodness. But how much better could deGrom be than what we've had so far? That is the amazing thing about this season. But when he comes back, I'm so excited for this team. I really am. And Buck Showalter is more than what has been promised. And I'm enjoying every minute of Buck Showalter's managerial reign so far. He has been the consummate professional, more concerned with what might still happen than reactionary to what just occurred. He remains stoic. The biggest smile we might have seen from him this season emerged when he asked local reporters having to rewrite their stories after the Mets' comeback. He loved the idea of what the buck just happened and wanted to know if it was usable. It got used. The Mets still have 134 games remaining, and maybe April, May doesn't mean too much. The extraordinary nature of the last 2 weeks tells you there could be something beyond a mirage at work here. If nothing else, the Mets have become a team worth watching to the final out. And honestly, isn't that what every Met fan wants? What every Met fan doesn't want is the current state of the Phillies, and Joe Girardi seems like he's getting booed out of Philadelphia. That had to be a tough loss for the Phillies. Now, I'm not crying over any spilled milk with the Phillies. They're probably the team I dislike the most. I don't hate any team, but the team I like the least is the Phillies. Now, they have a star-studded outfield, and everywhere on the lineup is a great hitting ball club. But they just don't play defense, and there really aren't as many bright spots as expected, and I don't even consider the Phillies a threat to the Mets right now. The team I still have to watch out for is the Braves and the Marlins with their pitching staff. Maybe not this year, but they could do some damage to either the Braves or the Mets' chances this year, I think. But they're going to have to be looked at. If they start putting the pieces together, and they've been doing the right thing, it's unfortunate Jeter had a disagreement with management, because there is something going on there. But the Phillies, since Girardi's there, have only won 121 games and lost 127. They've fallen well short of expectations. Now, Girardi came in with a lot of hype. He was a manager who was expected to win the World Series. He won the World Series with the Yankees, reached a playoff six times, and won at least 91 games five times in 10 years with the Yankees. But it's just not working in Philadelphia. And they're off to a poor start, 11-15, 7 games behind the Mets already. Now, when the Phillies hired Girardi, it was viewed as a missed opportunity for the Mets. Yes, a lot of people wanted Girardi over Buck Showalter. But now that we have Buck Showalter, how many people can say that? And let's be honest, the way Buck is managed, he's outmanaged Joe Girardi, and it's part of the reason why the Phillies are slumping. The Mets have now won 5 of 7 contests against the Phillies, and that included that combined no-hitter in Thursday's miraculous come-from-behind victory. So I'm not a Philly fan, but if you're a Philly fan, you can't be feeling good. Have good thoughts about the Mets in your brain right now. It is early, and you never know what happens in baseball, right? But the Phillies have a rough road ahead. They have a 7-game West Coast trip against the Mariners and Dodgers, and then come back home to face the contending Padres and Dodgers for heading back out on the road for 7 games with the Braves and the Mets. So it's going to be a big month for the Phillies, and we're going to find out a lot about how the NL East forms by what happens in the next month or so for the Phillies. Now, Girardi's without a contract for next year, so this month could be the month that decides Girardi's fate. And he needs to respond to his toughest loss in Philly's tenure that's happening right now. Okay, now it's time to celebrate some Met birthdays. People born on this date, May 7th. Today, we salute 5 former Mets whose birthdays are today. Billy Murphy, born in this date in 1944. Manny Hernandez, born this date in 1961. Brooke Fordyce, born this date in 1970. James Loney, born this date in 1984. And Keon Broxton, born this date in 1990. On this date, unfortunately, we lost Gus Bell on 1995. Gus Bell, part of that Bell lineage that runs rampant through Major League Baseball. Now, as far as transactions are concerned, on this date in 1976, the Mets traded the Blade, Tom Hall, to the Kansas City Royals for Brian Jones. This date in 1992, the Mets claimed Chico Walker on waivers from the Chicago Cubs. And on this date in 2017, the Mets claimed Tommy Malone. Oof, I used to hate when Tommy came in. Nothing personal, but he used to get lit up like a Christmas tree when he came in. And they got him on waivers from the Milwaukee Brewers on May 7th, 2017. So those are your birthdays for today. Now, as always, we're going to go and talk about what's going on as far as our trivia question and Jeopardy questions. And see if we can stump you. You guys are usually good on these things. But before we go any further on that, if you're not a member of the baseball group, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life on Facebook, I highly recommend it if you're on Facebook. To me, and, you know, maybe I'm a little prejudiced here, but I think it's the best baseball group there is on the interweb for New York Mets. It's New York Mets Baseball Way of Life. And if you're not a subscriber to this podcast, please do subscribe. You get updated every time one is up. We're on all the major carriers, and we dig deep, as you can see by this show, into the Mets every day. So please join. You'll be glad you did. And if you ever need to reach out to me with any comments, concerns, complaints, suggestions, whatever it may be, reach out to me like some of you already have at philstan41@gmail.com. I respond to everybody. Now it's time for Mets Jeopardy and Trivia. Who's ready, my friends? Who do we have ready? Okay, you got your pens and your writing utensils left out? Anyone watching Jeopardy with that run? What's her name? Oh, I can't remember. The young girl. And what a finish it was yesterday, if you haven't seen it. But she was fun to watch on Jeopardy. Matea was her name. She was fun. Anyway, today's Mets trivia question is, what was Cleon Jones' first number with the Mets? And our Jeopardy, as always, 2 clues. Original member of the Mets, drafted with the 32nd selection in 1961 Major League Baseball expansion draft. Second clue, only spent the first 2 weeks of 62 season with the team, playing in 8 games, including 5 as a starting outfielder, for being dealt to the Cubs on April 26th. So there's your Jeopardy and trivia questions of the day. Now let's talk about what's going on in the greatest group there is for the New York Mets, New York Mets baseball way of life. We reminisce about this date in 1991 when the Straw Man, Darryl Strawberry, returns to New York as a Dodger with mixed results. A big crowd of 49,118, mostly booing Darryl, watches him hit a two-run homer, and they cheer when he makes the last out of the game with the potential tying and winning runs on base. And that was in the Mets' 6-5 victory. And on this date in 2013, the Dark Knight had a game for the ages. Matt Harvey, he continued to dominate the National League when he throws 9 frames of one-hit ball along with 12 strikeouts en route to a no decision in the team's 1-0 extra inning victory over the White Sox at Citi Field. Now, the 24-year-old right-hander, who retires the first 20 Chicago batters he faces, adds to the growing legend he has built for himself when he starts the game with a bloody nose and continues to pitch despite the blood oozing on his face. And we gave you a beautiful shot at Apollo grounds from the river. Really, really good shot. And then we asked you, do you remember Carl Willie? Well, do you? And then we reflected back to his date in 2012 when Jordani Valdespin made his first major league hit count. A big 9th-inning 3-run homer off the Phillies' Jonathan Papelbon to give the Mets a 5-2 lead. And we attached a video of that historic moment. And speaking of historic moments, in another video you can watch on the site, this date in 2016, the Mets 6-3 victory over the Padres, 42-year-old Bartolo Colon goes deep off James Shields, becoming the oldest player to hit his first major league home run. Now, the poorly right-hander, who has now collected 3 extra base hits during his 19-year career, surpasses Randy Johnson, who was 2 years younger when he cleared the fences in 2003, playing for Arizona. So those are good stuff we always talk about in the group. We have some good stuff going on. And even Mike Reed is... had the same thoughts as me. Are they going to play today? We shall see. And just good stuff. We showed you all the back pages from the news, the Post, and Newsday about what's going on with the big Met win over the Phillies. And we commemorated the back page of the Daily News 4 years ago when the back cover said, "See a boy blunder." Yes, Matt Harvey was let go by the Mets. We got a beautiful picture of Willie Mays coaching Lee Mazzilli as Joe Torre looks on. Great shot at a doctor in 1985. God, I love this site. And who has the most strikeouts by a Met in his first 24 career games? I'll run them down for you. You'll see who is number 7 on the list and be proud. Doc Gooden, 193. Matt Harvey, 172. Noah Syndergaard, 166. Jacob deGrom, 153. Nolan Ryan, 141. Steven Matz, 135. Tyler McGill, 135. Unfortunately, we had to mention that Adam Ottavino has inherited 6 runners this season and allowed 5 of them to score. Hilda, now I always forget her middle name here, Boria Kokosi Molero, attached a great article about Harold Reynolds explaining how Buck Showalter has changed Francisco Lindor's mindset. Good read. Check it out on the site. Like I said, good stuff on there every day, so please do check out the site. Okay, now as we do every day, it's time to wrap up the podcast by revealing the answers to today's trivia and Jeopardy questions. Who is ready? Okay, looks like some of you are. That is good. For those of you who aren't, well, you can always replay the podcast and find out. That's what I always suggest. Anyway, here we go. Here's the trivia question once again. What was Cleon Jones' first number with the Mets? Well, the correct answer is number 6. Congrats to Kareem Haywood on being the first to submit the correct answer. Today's Jeopardy clues, we have 2 of them. Yes, we do. First clue is original member of the Mets drafted with the 32nd selection in the 1961 Major League Baseball expansion draft. Second clue, only spent the first 2 weeks of the 62 season with the team, playing in 8 games, including 5 as a starting outfielder, for being dealt to the Cubs on April 26th. Well, the answer to the trivia question, what was Cleon Jones's first number? Number 6. Congrats to Kareem Haywood on being the first to get that one. And the answer to the Mets final Jeopardy is, who is Bobby Smith? Congrats to John Tierney on being the first to get that one. Well, that's going to conclude another podcast. Can't tell you whether or not we'll have a podcast talking about today's game. I actually think it's going to rain and be rained out, but we shall see. I'm always wrong, so expect them to play at 4 o'clock. But we'll see what transpires. No matter what happens, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about Met baseball. And again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for listening. It means the world to me. And I really appreciate all the support you're giving this podcast. Stay dry out there. And remember, let's go Mets.
Ladies and gentlemen out there who don't understand the Italian language, I'd like to do 2 choruses in British. Lazy Mary, you better get up. She answered back, I am not evil. Lazy Mary, you better get up. We need the sheets for the table. Lazy Mary, you smoke in bed. There's only one man you should marry. My advice to you would be is to pay attention to me. You better marry a fireman, he'll come and go, go and come, zembala boom bamana there. Sitching up a la banda zia de bombaria, make it sunny. La la la, they should hit the pakala. Wave la la, bobina jajakata. Gamme voglio marida, tomba la vagliotta, gamme voglio marida.